Good morning, 810 here on the Mighty 690. James Cooper now joins us from K-State Research and Extension. How are you doing, James?
Doing good.
Good, good to have you. We've been talking all sorts of fun stuff during the break. Of course, you were listening in on Jesse's segment there. So some cool stuff happening here in Southeast Kansas for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have some events that you want to talk about coming up.
Oh, yeah. We've got so many events coming up. We're like full education season right now.
Because,
so,
yeah, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, it's winter. You're going to settle in down. No, that's not the case.
Yeah. Winter is when farmers have a little more time. So that's when they have to go back to school pretty much. So,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot. So on December 15th, and I know we've mentioned this before, December 15th, we'll have the Farm and Ranch Session Conference. And that will be actually be in Erie. And you know, succession, it's a long process, but we also got to talk about wills and trust and legalities to it, and just the general aspect of moving from one generation to the next. People really kind of need to know how to do this, honestly, and you know, how to initiate those conversations. So that'll be December 15th from 8:30 to 3:30, pretty long day. So, you know, it's definitely going to be worth it, though.
And that's one of those things you don't really want to have those difficult conversations
it
sometimes,
because
it's something we don't like thinking about, but it's really important.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of cases where those conversations were not held, and it's a mess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, please do. January 12th, we're going to in Fredonia. She's going to have our calving school there in Fredonia. I think it's going to be in the evening time frame. And, you know, those calving schools are really fun, actually. And they come out with that cow and all that. And they do the demonstration. AJ Tarpoff is an amazing speaker. So that's going to be a good one. January 20th in Parsons, the corn school will be hosted by the Kansas Corn Commission. They like to come down here because we got a really nice building there in Parsons. So January 18th and the next four Wednesdays after that will be our land leasing strategy class series. And I know we've talked about this a little bit. This is going to be, it's a class. I mean, it's a 3-hour class for 4 Wednesdays in a row. And so people that come to this, they learn a lot because it's pretty intense. I mean, everything that we're going to learn. And so, you know, these land leasing ideas, they're pretty important. And so it's something that I would highly suggest you get into if you're a farmer or rancher that leases, a landlord or a leasee. This is a really good idea. There's a lot more stuff we have in February, but I don't want to overwhelm people. I'll mention that stuff later, but there's even more classes later on.
Sure. So. And you mentioned land leasing, and I guess, so why are you having this class, and why is this, you know, what's the importance of this topic?
Yeah. So land leasing is important because about 50% of our ag land, and that's, I mean, both crops and cattle, is actually rented. And so in Kansas and around here, it's actually probably even more than that. And so whether it's rented or crop shared or something, 50% of it is managed by somebody who doesn't actually own it. So, you know, in around here with our small acreages and all that, it's probably even more. So it's pretty important. This is especially important for young farmers. Young farmers, of course, they can't afford land yet. Land is very expensive. Massive quantity of assets.
They don't make any more of it.
Yeah, they're not making any more of it. Hard to get into. So it's not uncommon for young farmers to actually rent land, even from their own families. Usually it's a much older family, or it's, you know, like a nephew renting from a grandma or something like that. And it's basically a way for the family to transmit basically that farm succession that we talked about before. So, you know, most leasing questions that I get are actually from the landlords. Usually older people that they don't really have anything to do with the farm anymore, or maybe they never really did. Somebody passed away and they inherited this land. But they're not really ready to sell it yet. It's part of the family. Land is, I mean, it's part of the family. And so, you know, they need somebody to take care of it. And that's where all this leasing information comes into question. And so land ownership, it's not always straightforward either. It's not always one person that owns something. Sometimes leases are actually owned by one group of people and leased to even yet another group of people. So it gets convoluted sometimes. And so this makes written contracts very, very important. You have to, everything has to be spelled out, written contracts. I mean, I'd say the vast majority of land leasing around here is by you know, the old handshake.
Exactly. I was just going to say that people are so used to that.
Yes.
And that can be a problem.
Yes, it is. And it does, you know, I've had phone calls where that becomes a problem. And it's not so much that people are fighting or anything like that. Sometimes that does happen too. I get those phone calls too. But it's actually because, like, maybe somebody passed away or something. And they don't have any concept of who, what that contract was or what happened to it. You know, it's just so much better to have a written contract, clarify all the confusion, make sure all the interested parties have a written part of that contract. Even if it's one that's going to expire and it's years old, it's something that you're not updating every couple of years. Having the original written contract is useful.
And is that something you need to have an attorney for that sort of thing?
No, you don't. Okay. Not really. Yeah. And ideally speaking, if it's very confusing, maybe it's a good idea to have an attorney that actually has understanding of ag law look into it. And there's actually a branch and extension, Kansas Agricultural Mediation Services, that can help you with that. But for the most part, these contracts are pretty straightforward. Okay. We have some blanks, actually, at the Ag Manager K-State website, and you can just basically fill in those blanks.
Okay. So yeah, that makes it helpful.
Yeah. And you know, all of this, of course, that means communication is very, very important. So.
Sure. Sure. No, that's great. So what are some of the rules when it comes to farm leases?
So the farm leases, especially when we're talking about verbal contracts, there's some set rules set by Kansas law that puts these leases into place. And ag leases kind of have their own sets of law, honestly. So ag contracts, they generally run from March 1st to March 1st, unless a contract states otherwise. And they need to be written and agreed upon 30 days before March 1st. So basically, that's not the end of January. That's January, a few days before the end of January, mm-hmm. Is when these things need to be set, which is why right now that's an important topic.
And so why that date?
That's just Kansas law. I don't know. It's just 30 days before March 1st.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Before the growing season and crops. I don't know why they set it there. Sure. But if you have a written contract, it can be set a different time frame. Sometimes they're set September 1st is a pretty common one. If a contract agreement is not in writing, it's basically an oral contract. So it's actually done by a 1 year to 1 year basis. And so sometimes written contracts can be maybe a 2 or 3 year, and then it's going to be renegotiated, basically the terms. But for the most part, if it's just a oral contract, there's no written contract, it's 1 year. So 1 year to 1 year to 1 year. And whether you agree upon it or not, it's actually extended year after year. So most current contracts, they're very old, because if there was ever a written contract, it's gone now. Nobody has any idea where it went. It was made decades ago. So, you know, but that doesn't mean that there isn't still a contract. If it's a handshake, it's still a contract. If a landlord wants to terminate an oral contract, there actually has to be a written termination letter. So even though it's a oral contract, it has to be a written to terminate it. And this is also 30 days before the March 1st. And so at the March, the wheat situation is a little bit different because you can't get rid of a contract if you have wheat in the ground. You know, that's complicated. That changes a little bit with the dates a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, this is why this time of year is pretty important when it comes to all that. Oral agreements cannot be transferred without the landlord's agreeance to this. If it's a new people, it's a new contract, just like any other normal contract.
Sure.
So basically, you know, if one farmer dies pretty much or is done with farming, it's not like his son can take over that without an agreeance of the landlord. I've seen this before, basically, is what I'm trying to say. You have to let them know. Technically, from the county, when it comes to noxious weeds and some other things, sometimes there's disagreements. From the county's perspective, it doesn't matter. It's actually the landlord who's responsible for it, but it's also somewhat the leaser as well. And so there's a lot of gray areas when it comes to these. And, you know, ideally speaking, these contracts, they need to be updated every 2 to 3 years. Usually the calls that I get have a lot, of course, have to do with the rental amounts. And even if you're just updating the rental amounts, it's still a good idea to update them every 2 to 3
sure.
years. And so rental amounts don't really change all that much, but still they need to be done. The most common questions that I get by landlords, sometimes they ask maybe questions like, am I supposed to be paying for herbicides, for instance? That's generally Yes, that's actually true, especially in a crop share situation. In a crop share situation. And so with a cash rent, you know, the question is usually, am I getting a fair amount? That's very hard to say. I try to help people with that question as best I can. Right. We don't have great data on that, but you know, I help what I can, and what I hear anecdotally, you know, from just this and that, the conversation sometimes. And so it can be a little hard, honestly. But you know, when people move from crop share to cash rent, usually I suggest people that do that basically move from that one system to the next system as they start to move farther and farther away from the farm, because cash rent is easier than crop share.
Sure. People, it's less complicated.
Yes. Basically, when you're a crop share, you're kind of a farmer who's not farming, because you still have to pay for the fertilizer and the herbicides and all that. And some people will be sticker shocked, I guess, with how expensive some of this stuff has gotten.
Well, especially, yeah, right now, I mean, we're chasing a moving target with inflation.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's pretty expensive. So, you know, cash rent's not always a bad way to go, even if over time, generally, it's slightly less.
Sure.
But
anything else that landlords or farmers should know about the rules?
So, the two things that contracts are often get missed is hunting and basically firewood. So, you know, hunting, of course, is a big deal around here. Obviously, we have lots of hunters. Oddly enough, by lease law, unless it's specified in a contract, neither the landlord or the tenant can hunt the ground. The landlord, of course, can't hunt the ground because they're no longer the manager of it. You can't hunt the ground. You also can't sublease that to somebody else. The same thing with the leaser. They can't not sublease that ground to be hunted by somebody else. So there's a question about whether that leaser can actually hunt the ground himself or herself, but it's actually technically outside of the scope of what that ground was being rented for. So it's a different kind of contract. So basically, to make it less ambiguous, just agree upon it, ideally in a written contract, of how that hunting can need to take place, and then none of that will be dealt with. The same thing with firewood. You know, sometimes landlords like to still go out and cut down the windfalls, head trees, and all that, but technically they can't do that unless they have an agreement from the person that's renting it. So, you know, besides that, when we're around here, we're kind of talking about, you know, wind turbines, drilling, gas leasing, all that. None of that can be done without the leasers' agreements upon that too. So landlords, you're basically giving away a lot, not your rights of your property, but you're giving away almost all the management, and that's confusing to a lot of landlords. So, you know, but all this leasing and stuff, we're going to cover a lot of this in this four-part series. And so, you know, it's confusing. There's a lot of rules and stipulations. And so if you're a farmer or a rancher that does a lot of this leasing, this series is really going to help you out a lot.
No, it sounds really good. I mean, I've already learned so much just from our conversation here. And if people have questions about this or they want to sign up for any of these workshops that are coming up, how can they do that?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, of course, our Facebook page, of course. We have put all that stuff on there. Or just give us a call at any one of the Wildcat Extension offices. The number for Girard, like Jesse was saying, 620-724-8233.
All right, James, and while I have you here, how is winter wheat looking? Have you been driving around?
It's looking real good.
That's
actually
what I thought.
We're
That's
getting just a nice amount of rain very periodically. And so as long as we keep getting about an inch of rain every 2 or 3 weeks, you know, it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, this has been pretty actually not too bad
we
from the rainfall
so far.
So, we just over the weekend had a little over half an inch. So, I mean, it's just slow and steady.
That one makes a beautiful wheat right
there.
We're
still in the drought, but hey, the fields look pretty happy right now. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, James, as always, it's a pleasure. Really appreciate you coming on. And I always enjoy learning so much on Wednesdays.
Yeah,
it's great.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Looking forward to the next time. And hey, we are going to get started with an early bird edition of Open Line right after this on the Mighty 690.